He is God's minister to you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. This is Ministry of the Badge.
Welcome back to Ministry of the Badge. My name is Chaplain Gonzo, or Brian Gonzalez, however you want to call me. Hey, today we're going to switch gears. As you can see on the screen, I have a guest with us today. The man is Tim Barfield. He is a man that I highly, highly respect. He's a Christian brother. Tim and I are simply going to have a conversation about him, about the state of policing, the way we see it. Two veteran cops. I'm a little more veteran than I am. But he is going to be a person that is going to have a wealth of knowledge. And I know that if you just pay attention to what Tim has to say, you're going to get a lot out of this conversation. So, hey, Tim, welcome to Ministry of the Badge. I appreciate you being here, man.
Hi, Brian. It's great to be here. Thank you.
Hey, man, you know what? You have no idea, dude. And you and I were just having conversation off camera. And to me, man, this is an honor. When I met you down in Aleta, I took a course of yours. Respect. That's all I got to say, brother, is respect. You are a man respected in the law enforcement community. You are a man who I'm very proud to say you're going to be my very first interview here on Ministry of the Badge. And I know, man, I know that you are a wealth of knowledge. And like I said, I appreciate you doing this for me. Hey, tell me a little bit about you. I know about you, but maybe people that tune in don't know anything about you.
Okay, let's see about me. So I'm married. I have five kids. Actually, I'm married. I lost my first wife a few years ago to cancer. God was gracious and provided me yet another wife. So I have five children. She has three. All of them are grown up and moved on in their lives. But that's where I'm currently at. But, you know, a father, a grandfather, a husband, still technically, legally a police officer, although only a special status kind of holds my commission thing. I started in law enforcement in 1981. Worked in a small little village town for a few months and then moved on to my hometown for about a year. Then I got hired by the Maple Heights Police Department. It's an inner ring suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. I spent 32 years there. When I retired from there, I was commander in charge of the patrol division. I left that job to take a position with the Wellington Police Department as their chief of police for 8 years. And all I can tell you is overall a great ride, had its bumps like everybody does, but it was a great ride.
Wellington Police Department, that was your last gig then?
Yes.
So what did you find? I mean, how long did you do in supervision in law enforcement? How many years? I mean, you spent what, a total of 40 years? Am I getting this right for in law enforcement? And how many in supervision?
Yeah. 20. Gosh. No, 20. Geez, I don't know.
So over 20 years.
20, 25. Yeah, over 20 years. Jeez. Over 20 I have to years. Go back and think. You know, I haven't looked at my resume in a while, so.
So 1981, holy cow, I bet you've seen a lot of changes in law enforcement. I got into law enforcement in 97, so you were well into your career by the time I got into it. What are some of the biggest changes you've seen in law enforcement from 81 to 97? And I know that's a broad spectrum, but just give me some highlights of things that you've seen change.
Yeah, so sure. So as far as changes, I think the worst changes here started like 2014, right? I think Ferguson was a drastic change to law enforcement. Prior to that, we certainly were getting beaten down and kicked a little bit. Politics has entered law enforcement. Politics and law enforcement do not mix well at all. I think that Ferguson made a big change. Certainly Obama abused that whole situation, and then politics really came in. I see the vilification of law enforcement and its policemen to the point where today Policemen are afraid to do their jobs, and we need proactive policemen. And it's interesting, right? So we just passed the, what anniversary was it, of the Oklahoma City bombing, okay?
Oh, yeah,
That was just 2 days ago.
Right.
And how did we get Timothy McVeigh? We got him by a proactive policeman just out doing his job, the same very thing that today many politicians, and here's that political nonsense again, but many politicians are trying to ban policemen from even pulling people over. We wouldn't have gotten Timothy McVeigh if it was not for a proactive policeman out there just trying to do his job. And policemen are afraid to do their jobs today. There's no doubt. So I think that's the biggest change. I think that policemen are afraid to do their jobs. In many cases, officers do their job. They do all the right things, and yet we still look to prosecute them. Thankfully, in most cases, the courts have ultimately seen through this, and those policemen have won their cases. But the damage they do when they do these things, coming after policemen for doing their jobs, sends a message to other cops who are saying, like, why bother? Why would I do my job if I'm going to get, if I could be criminally charged? So what you have today is a bunch of policemen, and I can, I'm sure you've seen it. I'm sure other viewers here on your show have seen this, but there are tons of video out there of police just drive by an active incident going on.
Yeah.
And that is not good for America. The politicians say, crime is down. Here in Cleveland, there's a DOJ a consent decree out there that is just destroying Cleveland Police Department, where those consent decrees have just destroyed every police department and neighborhood in those areas. But
explain what a consent decree is to those that might not know. Not everyone that's going to listen to this show. Yeah, no, not everyone's going to listen to it. Yeah, I agree it's an abomination, but not everyone who's going to listen to a show may be in law enforcement. Even if they are, they may not have even heard of such things. So what is that consent decree?
Sure. So what happens is in almost every case, the Department of Justice comes in and they look at a few things or make up a few things. And then they say that there is a pattern and practice of discrimination by the law enforcement agency that they're attacking. And they come to the politicians again in those places. And in most cases, these are big cities. So they're run by politicians that agree with that ideology. And they get those departments to agree to be put under DOJ supervision. Which is interesting because in most cases, these DOJ people, they don't even know law enforcement in the first place, but they put them under a consent decree and they monitor everything that they do. And they spend millions and millions and millions of dollars to monitor the police department. And I can't think of a single case where any of these police departments have actually gotten better. I'm not saying that we can't do better. Conversations, Gonzo, you and I have had over the years, I believe that we can absolutely do better. But the damage that they do by these political maneuvers, by labeling police as a bad guy, by ignoring criminal behavior, they've not only made it bad for law enforcement, they've made it bad for the people in those communities. It is more dangerous. And when places say, for example, that crime is down, it's because the police aren't investigating and people aren't reporting. And so there's really, the crime isn't down. It's just not being reported. So we say it's not there.
Right. Well, and so if I'm hearing you correctly, and again, I got in on 97. So I saw the changes too from 97 to 2014. When I first got on the police department, it was the, school shootings were just starting to be a huge thing. And I think it was right after Columbine. somewhere in that area that I got on. So, you know, it started to be anti-gun and all these things, and cops were really needed and whatever else. And then all of a sudden, 2014, I think one of the biggest departments that took a huge hit was King County in Seattle. I remember when that was a big thing in Obama. That was on Obama's radar. And now you go, and people say, you don't even want to go to Seattle now. It's so bad. Portland, the same kind of thing. So Chicago, I mean, you and I both know cops from Chicago. Tommy Klein, we both know him. I mean, you talk to Tom over the years on how Chicago went, and I think a lot of it has to do with a lot of those consent decrees. I agree. I think you and I have seen it. When you were chief of police in Wellington, and chiefs of police nowadays, you know, let's face it, they're products of the people who hire them, right? A lot of times. Did you find a lot of conflict with your mayor or your city, whoever hired you there in Wellington? Was there a big conflict between you two? That seems to be where a big rub is, especially with chiefs of police. I mean, you were a chief of police. Is there a rub there between you and your mayor, or do you see that across the board, or what do you think plays into that?
Well, so I served under two mayors there. The first mayor, when I was hired there. So I was hired specifically. They wanted to make a change in the culture of that department. And so I was one of many candidates. I was the lucky guy that got selected. I guess I checked the right boxes for them. I certainly brought a lot of experience in my previous job. So, I got along with the mayor, but she had some bad information along the line, and she kind of stepped in between an employee issue and me. And we had to sit down, and I had to have a conversation with her and explain the law to her and stuff. And she ultimately apologized and stepped back and let me do my job. The second mayor that I served under, I had told people what a great guy he was because he really just let me do my job. Now, something happened the last 6 months of my time there, and it absolutely smelled of politics to me. But that was my decision when the mayor decided to step in and basically try to run the police department. I just knew that it wasn't going to work for me. He had been great and stayed out and listened to my advice. He made some bad decisions, and I just lost my confidence in him. It was clearly time for me to go from there. But generally, I thought it was pretty good. But, you know, here's the problem, right? Politics is politics. Right. And when the politics intruded, it was time for me to pull the plug. Maybe there was a time when I was younger and I would have fought a little bit harder. But at that point I had already, done, you know, like 43 years in law enforcement. And, I just didn't have the energy anymore to play those stupid games. That, and, you know, the last probably about 8 or 9 years of this anti-police nonsense, you know, it just wears you out. You're just done. And, and I was done at that point. So.
Yeah. And yeah, yeah, I know all about the anti-police nonsense, but, let me tell you, it's what's interesting about what you just said is when a mayor lets you do your job, and there's the politicians that we're talking about, because I think it, especially in police now, sheriff's departments, they're a little bit different, right? You got a guy who's nominated by the people or whatever, but you could have a sheriff in a county that is, you know, so far woke that he's going to do things that are just going to drive the county, you know, crazy, and it's not good for law enforcement either. And he will cave to political pressure because he's a political animal. But by the same token, I think if there are sheriffs that are very highly conservative, you look at Joe Arpaio out in Arizona, you look what they did to him eventually, and Joe Arpaio ran a tight ship out that way. And all of a sudden, boy, the tides change, and that politics, the winds of politics blew, and look what happened to Arpaio. So I agree with you. I think politicians get in the way of policing big time, but I thought it was key what you said. When the mayor got out of your way and let you do your job, what does that mean? Do your job how?
Yeah, so I think I don't want to say that there shouldn't be some civilian oversight. I certainly think that in law enforcement, we certainly need checks and balances too. Okay. Sure. So I think it's good to have somebody, you know, overlooking these things, but there's got to be a certain amount of trust you have with your, in this case, chief of police, right? You got to have some trust that he knows what he's doing. You've got to defer or at least certainly have the conversations with him about how that job gets done. And so, yeah, so in my case, so I always thought there was very good communication, and I communicated, I kept, you know, my boss apprised of the things that were going on. If they were sensitive, I would tell them that they were sensitive. I gave them enough more information than most people got, enough information. And there certainly seemed to be that trust for all those years. And what that did is it allowed us to move forward. Now, we had other fights, right? We were struggles, if you will. You know, increasing manpower, increasing pay. The pay was, McDonald's workers were making more money than my people were making when I got there. So wow. That is something that had to change. But, you know, but we were successful in changing and doing some things. So when I say get out of the way, I don't mean like step back and not do anything, but I think you've got to trust your chief. You've got to have good conversations, and you've got to defer to their experience when it makes sense.
Yeah. So any chief of police that might listen to this, any wannabe chief of police that might want to listen to this, your best advice?
Well, boy, this is tough. Gonzo, for whatever reason, some people may call it foolishness. Some people may call it bravado. I don't know. I was blessed with courage from a long time ago. And so I fight for the things I think are right. I did that in my job in Maple Heights, coming up through the ranks. There were times that I would fight for things that I thought were right, regardless of the outcome, and it didn't always work out well, but you've got to be courageous. So I think courage is important. I know for me, when I took the job in Wellington, I had met all the requirements of receiving my pension. So, you know, I didn't have to worry about that pressure anymore. So you got to have courage. You've got to know the truth. Boy, that there's a whole topic here, right? What's the truth? And You and I both know that comes down to, you know, the God of the Bible and what he says is true. But if you're guided by truth and you have the courage to stand up to those things, then I think you'll do well. But that means that you might be having to walk away from a job because you're being courageous. What I see mostly today, I see cowards. I see cowards in law enforcement, especially cowardly leadership. There's some great chiefs out there, great leaders, but there are way too many cowards, and those people are shaping the landscape. And I think there's a lot of people that would agree with me. But I think the problem we have with recruitment and retention of law enforcement today has everything to do with the cowardice and bad leadership of a department than it does with finding the right people to fill those roles.
Wow, that says a lot. And I'm going to tell you what, Tim, I agree 100%. You said a lot of interesting things there. When you fought your way up for the things that you felt were right, was it just for you, or was it for your guys? Was it for a combination of things, or was it just because, you know, it's the freaking thing we should do? It's the right thing to do. What did you fight for?
So I certainly would stand my ground when I needed to stand my ground for me. But when I became, supervisor, my fights were always for my people. In fact, I remember as a shift sergeant, I was campaigning for one of my guys to get a slot, right? And he ultimately got it, like many of my people had. And, people are accusing you of being a brown nose or whatever. And I said, listen, I'll fight for my people. I want them to do the right things, but I will fight for them. I know, like in my job at in my job as a chief, at least twice, it may have been more, but I know at least twice when I was arguing for higher pay, I told the mayor in writing that I would forego any future pay raises if they would just raise the rate for my people. So I don't know what more I can say. I said I would have worked the same pay scale for, 8, 10, 15 years, just to get my people the right place. So, I hope my fights were always for them. And there are many more stories like that, but I think your answer has got to be, you've got to fight for your people, because ultimately we serve our people. We serve the people above us and next to us, but we also serve the people below us. So,
you know what, man? And it was the one thing when I left your class the one time, and I can't remember the title of the class that I took of yours, but I remember leaving that class as like, I'd work for that dude. Man, if I could have left my job and came to Ohio and worked for you, I would have. I felt that strongly about watching and listening to your leadership. I want you to talk a little bit about that too, because there's one thing that you did for your guys that I thought was very impressive. You had them read a book. And I think this is, man, if you guys are out there and you're a chief of police, you're a sheriff, you're a sergeant on this, I want you to pay attention to this, because here's a man who is a servant leader. That's the way I viewed you, Tim. You are a servant leader, and that's hard to find. You know, in the first part of Ministry of the Badge, I did a composite on the centurion in the Bible, and we're going to get into both Tim and I are Christians. We stand our ground as Christians. We'll get into that here in a minute. But the one thing about that centurion is he was a people that cared for his people underneath him, and he cared for the people that he served. Just what you said. You hold the epitome of that centurion. But talk about that book and talk about what you did for promotional times for your guys. I want you to talk a little bit about that.
So, we talk about this Christian idea, right? So for me, I don't know if anybody else has these, but I have kind of a life passage of the whole Bible, and all of it is precious. But for me, that life passage is Micah 6:8. And Micah 6:8 says, what does God require of you, man, but to seek justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God? And so that idea, justice, doing the right thing, mercy, trying to see people as people, and we're going to get into that specifically. And then humility, right? Not thinking too highly of yourself, and just be willing to admit when you make mistakes, kind of thing. So that passage just kind of drives me. And so quite a few years ago, and at ILETA, when I was taking a class from Chip Huth, and Chip Huth retired as a major from Kansas City, Kansas. He now works for Arbinger, but he had mentioned many years ago, he mentioned a book. He had written a book himself, but he had mentioned a book called Leadership and Self-Deception. And I read that book, and I thought it just kind of epitomized ultimately that idea of seeing people as people. And so we made that a required reading. Everybody that wanted to work for the Wellington Police Department. And so that meant dispatchers, auxiliaries, policemen, whatever. Everybody had to read that book. Well, we went through an interview. If they got through the interview and we thought they were going to move on, then they had to read that book and they had to come back. And then we would have a discussion about that book and the impacts of it. Because, again, I think that book boils down to just seeing people as people. And as a police officer, I don't care what rank you are, where you're at, you've got to be able to see the humanity in people. We're not all just bad. We're not all just good. We're people that make mistakes. All of us, the people under us that work for us, the people that we serve, the houses that we go to. I've even used the example, and some people really have a hard time with this, but I've used the example, for example, what do we know about a child molester? Well, we know that they're dangerous. They probably can never be reintegrated into society. They have hurt people. Okay, but what do we know about child molesters? We know generally they've been hurt by somebody who is supposed to have loved them, and that person hurt them. And if you can't at least acknowledge the humanity there, the damage that was done by somebody that was supposed to have loved you and cared for you, then I don't think that we can do this job very well, because we have to be able to see the humanity when we go on the street. I remember in one of my cases, I had put in one of my guys. He had gone to a bar about closing time. And while he was there, somebody ran up to him and said, you know, hey, there's some people over there and they're fighting. And one guy's got a gun. And so he calls out real quick, but he runs up and he handles this call. And it's pretty harrowing. And the bosses in this thing, I'd gone in and I said, like, we need to put him in for an award. And they were like, he screwed up. He put himself in danger. And I said, well, that's kind of what we do. And he kind of did what, I mean, he does what policemen do, right? We run into danger.
Right.
I know sometimes it's dangerous, but it's who we are.
Right.
And I said, but he ran in there and he helped those people. And he said, yeah, but these people are, you know, drunks and addicts and whores. And I said, but you don't get to make that decision right now. You know, because right then they were victims.
Right.
And I'm not excusing bad behavior. It's not hug a thug kind of thing, but
right.
We have to understand people are people.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, we get to that whole thing. Like, what do we know about somebody that's a prostitute? Probably abused or mistreated, right? In their life and right. Maybe in desperate times. I'm not excusing it. I'm not saying it's okay, right. But I am saying we have to try to understand the humanity of people. So I think that book, Leadership and Self-Deception, spoke very vividly about the humanity of people. I would recommend it to anybody, the whole trilogy from Arbinger Institute. But
yep.
We have to be able to see people as people. And it's what I've tried to do for a good percentage of my career, is see the humanity of people. Sometimes that makes people angry. But I think that if we can't see that humanity, then I don't think we can do a very effective job.
Yeah. Wow. There it is. I learned a lot. And that led you to a drug program that you did. And now we're going to kind of transition into where you and I both have a solid thing. But tell me a little bit about that drug program that you did. And how much of a difference did that make in your community?
Yeah. So it's interesting. So I had come from a much bigger city, right? So I came from this inner ring suburb of Cleveland where most of the people we dealt with were transient. You know, we didn't have connections with these people, like growing up with them kind of thing, right? When I took the job in Wellington, this was a small farm community, and these people all grew up together. I go out there and it's the midst of this heroin epidemic that we had in this country. Not that it's really any better today. We just saved more lives than we did before, but you know, it's still terrible. But what happened was when we were going on these calls, my officers and the fire department and the EMS people, they all knew these people. You know, they were seeing people they went to school with, or, you know, people that their children hung out with or whatever. They were, you know, very connected to the deaths and the destruction that heroin and fentanyl were doing. And so I met with the fire chief and the EMS director, and I said, we can't arrest our way out of this situation. What if we try to help them? And all of that was rooted in seeing the humanity again. I was a little surprised. I have to tell you, I was told before this happened that that people that were addicted to heroin and fentanyl were mostly introduced by the medical community. And I thought that was nonsense. I was of the belief that people made that choice. But what happens was our own statistics, and we'll get into that program in a second, but that our own statistics said that about 80% of the people, which was the number about that I was given, are medically introduced. So, you know, somebody's involved in a horrific car crash. Maybe they're the passenger, so they didn't do anything wrong, but their leg gets crushed and You know, they get put on Oxycontin for pain control, but then because of the laws we've made in our country, you know, we don't do any pain management. We just cut them off, and now they need something. And, you know, they try to buy Oxycontin because they're, you know, they're decent people and trying to get by. And then next thing you know, it's too expensive. And so it gets to the heroin and the fentanyl. And, you know, our statistics prove that out. So we sat down and we said, like, how can we just help these people? And so we developed a program, a policy that said that we would get help. We would be the clearinghouse. We don't do it. We're not qualified to do that. But we would be the clearinghouse. We would get these people into treatment if they would just come in and say they needed help. And so we did that in the beginning, working through some different organizations. We were shipping, this was way before the treatments that we see today. It's fairly easy, at least terrible, but fairly easy to get treatment. Back then, we had to ship people to Florida or California, and we would buy them an airplane ticket, have somebody waiting on the other end. We'd get them to the airport, put them on a plane, and somebody other end and pick them up. And you know, grants to give them the treatment they needed. This stuff's not cheap.
Right.
But so what happened was that, of course, the treatment programs became more local, thankfully, and things got better as far as that. But what happened is we would have to sit with these people until we could get somebody there with them. And it would take about 45 minutes before we could get a, you know, a drug counselor or a peer, you know, with them.
Right.
And so there was about a 5 or 7 page, I don't remember now, but form that we had to fill out gathering information. And what happened is, you know, when this whole thing started, my people said, this guy's crazy. And I had, you know, I had other chiefs and other police officers saying, like, this guy's crazy. Like, what is wrong with him? He's one of those liberal guys, which is not the case at all. But it was just seeing humanity.
Right.
But what happened was, as my people sat down and started gathering this information, my people stopped seeing them as addicts and started seeing them as human beings. And so not only did we have a big impact in our area, with those people that have substance abuse disorder, but my people changed. My people began to see the humanity in other people. Yeah. And that itself was incredible.
Yeah, that's huge. And you also didn't do it by yourselves, did you? You worked with local churches.
Oh, yes. No, absolutely. In fact, once we got everything in order, the church, I'd reached out to the only pastor in town that I knew at the time, because this was very early in the beginning of my time there. I reached out to the only pastor I knew, and I said, listen, this is what I want to do. Can you get me some pastors? So I expected to have 5 or 6 people there, and walked into probably about 30 pastors and, you know, associate pastors. And we sat down and we connected up a heck of an organization. And what happened was, to relieve our officers, we would call up these people. They would come in and they would sit with these people and, you know, help out there. So yes, the church was absolutely involved, as I think it needs to be, in these problems.
Yeah. And I know you did a little documentary on that. Patrick did a documentary on it. It's still out there, isn't it? People can still see it.
Yeah. Yes. It's called the Wellington Experiment. I don't know exactly what the status is right now. I didn't do that. Right. That's something that Patrick did yep. for us. But I guess if there's anything in that, it's really, again, it's the whole point of seeing the humanity of people. Yeah, you know, we're in a job. I wasn't always a Christian. I came into this as I was already a policeman. I became saved. And I remember telling my late wife at the time, when we became Christians, that after a while I said, I don't think I can do this job. Like, it's not really made for Christians, you know? And what I found was, what an incredible opportunity for a Christian to be in service. And so, yeah, I think, you know, Christ is the answer for everything, but certainly in law enforcement, I think that we would do better to have more people stand up for their faith where they're at. And, you know, we're told in this line of work, I had a It's a friend of mine, but one of my bosses at one time, one of the guys came and said, oh, he's trying to proselytize me. And it wasn't the case at all. But my boss said, you can't do that here. And I said, yeah, I can. And, you know, so many Christians are afraid to be Christians because we've been told by our society that we're not allowed to be that. But I remember when I took the job in Wellington and somebody said, you know, well, you probably ought to like leave the Christians part aside. And I said, you don't understand. Like, it's all together. You can't have one without the other. Right. So I would love to see Christians not be afraid to be Christians in their jobs.
Let's talk about that. So you became a Christian, you said, later on in your career. About when in your career did you become a Christian?
Yeah, so it was about 1992. So I had been a cop for about 11 years.
So about 11 years into it. So when did you, was this, because I know a lot of guys who came into Christianity while they were cops, okay? And I've heard from a few different of those cops say, man, I lost friends. Guys on the department don't hang out with me anymore. Guys, I mean, did you have a lot of that? Did you see some of that? I was a Christian when I came in and I wore it on my sleeve. So for me, I guess I set the tone right away. But there are other people that, like you, in a line of work, as you say, that isn't necessarily, you know, conducive to being a Christian. You know, we use language that Christians wouldn't use. We do a lot of things. And I leave no excuse for any of that, but I do believe the Lord lays in us, even as Christians, the ability to be able to do our job, to be in the world, but not necessarily of that world. But did you have a lot of those difficulties when you became a Christian?
Sure. Yeah. First off, was trying to shake off the old bad habits. Yeah. And when somebody sees that transition, I remember, one of the guys came to a Christian friend of mine and said, you have to understand, you don't know what he was like before. Like, he's changed. And the other guy goes, yeah, that's the whole point. But, all kinds of certain things that people didn't understand. They didn't understand, you know, wanting to be in church on Sunday, not wanting to hang out. I didn't go to a lot of shift parties. I didn't do those kinds of things. So again, some of that was when I told you I had said to my late wife that I didn't know if I could do this job, and some of it was that, like,
sure.
And some of the stuff that in myself I had been involved in it, I said, like, I can't do that anymore. When you go against that, you're going against that culture, and that is hard.
Yeah,
that is hard.
Yeah, it's a tough transition, and I'll tell you, I didn't necessarily fight it my whole career, but it was definitely something that I had to, if I didn't establish right away, boy, it could suck you in. Christian or not, it could suck you in the other way, simply because it is the general culture of policing. It's that way in the military. It's that way in a lot of these, you know, manly type jobs, these type A personality type jobs. I think that's what does it. But let's face it, we draw our strength, and this is where I want to get to the core for those who are Christians who are listening out there, and we draw our strength not from ourselves. We draw our strengths from the Lord. I mean, you said you had a hard time shrugging off some of the old ways, and the Bible talks about this consistently. Romans 7, you know, it's a whole passage dedicated to that specific thing. But for cops specifically, how do you balance that? Do you know what I'm saying? How do you balance that? Do you just kind of let those friends go, or do you kind of, how did you do that? Again, I talked to my one friend. He's like, man, I don't have anybody friends anymore. And then come to find out, you know, God, as gracious as he is all the time, introduced him to a lot of people that were Christians that he didn't even realize. And I think that's a problem too. I think that's a huge problem. These guys are kind of these undercover Christians as cops, and they should be bold standing out for that. Do you agree with that?
Well, sure, I do. And I think, though, I think that the more we stand up for Christ in the workplace, right, the more we proclaim him to our environment, the easier it becomes for those people that that don't want to or are afraid to say those things. And some of it is letting people go. I will tell you, I've worked with a lot of people. I hear people often talk about, you know, the friends they have. I will tell you, if you're lucky in your life, if you have two or three good friends, because most of the people that you hang out with are just people you worked with.
Yeah.
And I wish that was different,
yeah,
but it's the reality for most people. People say, well, these are my friends. They're not your friends. They're people you work with.
Yeah.
Because, and now you're recently retired too.
Yeah.
And, how many of these people you still hang out with? Not
correct.
Not very many,
correct,
right? Yeah.
Correct.
And yeah, so that's the reality of it. But, you know, we're to be in Christ. For me, my answer was always my family. Whenever we did things, even if it was hanging out with other cops, we would always try to do it as a family. So we would invite, you know, we wouldn't say, hey, you're and your wife and my wife and I, let's go out to dinner. We would say, we'll make dinner. Why don't you bring your kids over? And so we tried to make those connections.
Sure. Sure. And I think that's important. You know, what's interesting, and you're talking about kids. I know with my kids, when we would go do things we'd go on a vacation for the union, whatever. I spent some time on the board, the union board, the association board, however you want to say it. And my kids would be able to get together with these other cops' kids, or they'd go to school with them. And what I found to be interesting for my kids later on was, you know, and I never knew this until I left the job, you know, when they would have conversations with kids whose parents were cops, they'd be like, does your dad do this? And does your mom do this? Or do you know, right? And there's so many things that we do as parents, as cops, that kids are just like freaked out by, right? But after a while it becomes their life. That's their life. My kids, I'm sure like your kids, are a little more alert than other kids. They're a little more, I don't know about you, but I didn't really keep too many things from them. I told them how raw the world is. Some cops will take a stance and want to shelter and shield, you know, their families from all these things, when realistically it's hard to do, especially when it invades your life. So I always took the approach where, you know, I was blunt with them and I would make them aware. And of course I went through some awful things that a lot of cops don't go through, but nonetheless, as parents, it's a hard balance. And as Christian parents, I think it's even a harder balance, right? I mean, it's so prevalent to let our kids know what it is we do, but yet protect themselves, but yet they have to be in the world, but not of the world. Do you agree with that? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, yes, it is an interesting balance overall. There's a lot of things my children tell me today that I didn't know, you know, back then, right? Just observations, things they saw. You know, my children are all very protective, cautious.
Yeah.
You know, they're little sheepdogs, right?
yeah.
But I'm happy all of my children are conservative people and you know, they care about people. I hope, besides being the sheepdog, so part of that sheepdog is what? Protecting, right?
Yeah.
And I see that in my children. They're kind to other people, and I hope those are things that they took away too.
Yeah, and you know what? And I'm sure they did, and I'm sure they do. And but you know, I'm going to do a whole show on that. I got to try to convince a couple of my kids to come on and do an interview with me, because I think it's important to see cops. And sometimes we don't know all the things about our families, and I think it'll be interesting to the people out there. But so Christianity, Tim, we know, and you've taught classes at ILETA. More than I have. I too have taught classes at ILETA. Tell me about the first class, because what I found to be interesting about you too is like you are a groundbreaker in introducing Christian themes into ILETA. And if some of you don't know what ILETA is, it's an international group of training officers from all over the world. And you go to this centralized convention that they have, and you have breakout classes, and some of you may have gone to ILETA. If you haven't, I'd highly recommend going, because you do get a lot of good training from guys like this. But you broke into ILETA with Christianity. I mean, you and I did Bible study together when I was at ILETA. I taught at ILETA. Tell me about that. Tell me about your class and why you introduced this Christianity, because obviously you felt it was important.
Well, of course, I thought it was important. I guess The interesting thing is the conversations I would have with people, that was clear there were lots of Christian officers there.
Right.
So, but I'd never seen any explicitly Christian classes. So one year before I was ready to submit a class, I'd reached out to Harvey Hedden at the time, who was the president of the organization, yep. The executive director. And I said, like, can I have a specifically Christian class? And he said, well, we don't have any restrictions like that. So I submitted my first class there of a Christian theme called the Romans 13 Warrior. And it was well attended. And I think that did open up the doors for other people. I taught more than one explicitly Christian class over the years, but I think it opened the door for other people to not be afraid to stand up. And I'd love to tell you that was all about me being courageous, but we know that's the Holy Spirit. So,
yeah, but, and I agree with that statement, but we still have to take the step. I mean, there are plenty of stories in the Bible where the Holy Spirit, you know, came upon some of these people and they did the wrong. King Saul is almost a prime example of all of that, right? I mean, you're talking about a guy who, you know, was given the kingdom and did all these things, and that dude made a lot of wrong decisions. So I think you're right. I think the Holy Spirit will influence us and prompt us to do these things, but we still have to be willing to take that step and that boldness. And you did that into an organization of international groups of people where we know that internationally Christianity is not necessarily the dominant religion around the world. And for us, it's not about religion. This is about a relationship with Jesus Christ. So we know that's different, but most of the world looks at it from, oh, here we go with some of this, you know, Christian stuff, again, these Bible thumper things. And you did that. You went ahead and said, you know what? I'm prompted to do this. You took a chance and you did it, and I think you opened the doors for a lot of people to be that way. I know when I introduced my class, I did Surviving the Officer Involved Shooting, and I did Ministry of the Badge as a class. And I when I found out later on that you, the Romans 13 Warrior, I'm like, this is the guy. This is the guy who opened up the door for this. And I think that's huge, man. I think that's huge, and that's why I'm very – happy to have you on this program, because I think you bring a lot of that. And maybe you don't even realize it, but between this conversation and the many, many, many that you've had over the years with these guys over at ILETA, it's time to change. Because let's face it, Tim, we're in a crisis, not only in this country, but in this world. And there are so many forces. We wrestle not against flesh and blood, right? But against principalities, against rulers. You and I both know, being Christians, and maybe some of these people out here don't realize, that this is not just a battle of left versus right or whatever whatever political affiliation you hold. This is down to the spiritual. And let's face it, the reason why law enforcement is getting attacked, it's because law enforcement is God ordained. And law
Romans
enforcement,
13, right?
Romans 13, absolutely, and just what you said. And so you see organizations and things that are going against that, and it makes zero sense to me why, when God is the one who gave you the law, he started first through the family, through Noah. And when you look at, through Noah, by man's blood, if a man sheds another man's blood, by man's blood he shall be shed. That was given to Noah, right? Noah, there was no law enforcement at that time. There was no government, but it was given to the family. And then Noah, of course, influences that into the rest of the world through governments. But now here we are. Law enforcement is being attacked, and this is not about just attacking law enforcement or the rule of law. It's about attacking God. Do you agree with that?
No, of course. I think the answer is, as I stated, I think from the outset of this whole thing, the answer, of course, in everything is Christ.
Yeah.
It's our standard. What made the Germans wrong in killing all the Jews? By their standards, it was okay. They had rules. It was okay.
Correct.
What made it wrong?
Correct.
Ultimately, they had Nuremberg trials that were based in Christianity.
Correct.
Because Christ is the standard.
Correct.
How do we know what murder is or theft is? How do we know that anything's right? How do we know abortion is murder?
Correct.
Outside of understanding that, without this rule that God gave us, that it's all up to us.
You know, it's funny.
And so I think that answer has to be Christ. And certainly I would love to see that enforced in all of law enforcement. If you think back, I mean, look at the oath that you take, you know, when you go to stand in the jury, right? Or when you, when you testify, I mean, stand in the jury, when you testify in the jury, right?
Right, right.
You go in and you say, you know, so help me God.
So help me God. Yep. You know, there's recently an organization, and I don't know if you were ever a part of it, the IACP, the International Association for Chiefs of Police. This makes zero sense to me, Tim. I'm not here at Ministry of the Badge to bash anything or whatever, but I am going to say they have recently taken God out of their oath. And it comes just to what we're talking about. Romans 13 is pretty clear. Now, I understand they're not a Christian organization. They're a private organization, but they are a private organization that affects the public, right? They affect the public. So they can make a difference in your police department, in your whatever, and they pulled God out of their oath. One word, Tim, one word that's a huge impact on things. What do you think about that? And what do you know about that organization?
So I was a member of the International Association of Chiefs of Police. You know, we just got done talking about how God sets a standard without the Bible, without the rules that God laid down, without the Ten Commandments. How do we know what's right or wrong? So for an organization like the IACP to remove God from their oath just leaves room that the standard can be whatever anybody wants it to be. There's no longer any reason that you should treat somebody with respect, right? Because respect is going to be defined by them. If they'd have left God in, then the argument could be made, well, God set the standard on what respect is, what the rule of law is, what's right and wrong. But now that the IACP has taken that out, you know, they think they became inclusive, but they're the opposite of that. Now it can be up to every man to decide what those things are. God is that definition. He is that standard. He is that ruler by which we define right and wrong. And so I think it's terrible, although IACP in and of itself has been going that direction for some time. It's an organization of chiefs of police. It's not an organization of police officers. I mean, we look today, we see the George Floyd situation, and, you know, IACP came out with a statement right away, and now history, as the facts come out, we know that the IACP was wrong, and what happened in, you know, in Minneapolis, was wrong, and it was a lie, and they threw a policeman in jail, something that, was not illegal. And again, IACP backed that kind of nonsense. So, you know, I don't know that we should look at them to be our standard, but I certainly would encourage every policeman to take a look at the Word of God and try to live by that standard, because at least there we know what's right and wrong.
No, I agree 100%. You know, in my presentation called Ministry of the Badge, I go back to what you said about Hitler and Mao and all of those things. And I said, you know, how does God handle that? He uses another form of government to take out those forms of government, right? So God doesn't get away from his plan. He planned on having rules of government govern people. And he did it first through the family, and look what we've done to the family. I mean, you and I know that most of our job, most of the people we saw were products of broken families. We could do a whole nother show on that. But so God sets up the family and the family's attacked. And then you look at the churches and the weakness of the churches now even. And you look and you go, what is happening? And now it comes down to law enforcement, right? Law enforcement is the one that's going to keep all this sinful nature contained. And now you have an organization, like you say, who's coming out and trying to be PC and be inclusive to a certain specific group, when all you're really doing is hurting people overall. And you're not just hurting that specific group you're trying to defend. You're hurting everyone in general. because you have taken God out of where God is meant to be. And again, it comes down to a spiritual battle on things. And I agree with you. But you know this, Tim, and we go back to what you said originally. You've got to be brave and stand up. These chiefs of police that are out there, I remember sitting on a panel at ILETA, and it was a use of force panel, and I can't remember if you were on there or not, or I wasn't on the panel, I was watching the panel, but I was listening to some of these guys, and it was right after, I think, George Floyd, or maybe it was in between there. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So, and I remember going, why don't these chiefs of police stand up? You know, half the problem is these guys aren't standing up for a standard and, you know, whatever else. And I don't know if these guys were ICP, but one chief in the back of the room is like, I lost my job because I stood up for my guys and I stood up for what was right. Isn't that the problem? So you have an organization that you have like ICP taking God out of there. And so what does that tell these guys who are under that organization's banner? Well, you know, you better just back down. You better just comply. And I'm telling you, Tim, and you know this, this comes right down to biblical standards and standard of God, right?
Absolutely. You know, first off, I don't know which chief you're talking about, but my hat's off to him because he obviously stood for truth.
Yep.
And we've got to be ready to do that, knowing that God will still take care of us regardless. But it is asking a lot. It's asking a lot from our people. It's asking a lot of our people to stand up for the truth. And you can get beat up for that.
Yeah,
but we have to be courageous.
You have to be, you know, be bold and courageous. The Bible clearly says it. And granted, not everybody listening to this conversation is going to be Christian. And I will talk about how to become a Christian here in a second. But these are one of these things, Tim, that Ministry of the Badge, that's my heart for this program, is to just, you can be different. It is different. Don't be afraid to be different, especially if you are Christian. Understand the impact that you can make, even if it's on one life of the officers that you work with, even if it's on one life of a person that you come across. And I guarantee you it'll be more than that, because God just doesn't use you one time. He uses you one time, two times, three times. As long as he knows he can count on you, he'll keep putting you in situations. Yeah, Tim, I think you're proof of that. And so when I see and I hear of all these different changes that are coming in law enforcement, and again, the George Floyd thing, that could be a whole nother topic. I look at it and I say, man, Christian cops. I know up in Hennepin County, you and I were having this conversation. I was up in Hennepin County as a police chaplain, and those guys are getting beat up there. And all based on lies and nonsense, and nothing is the truth anymore. And what do you do when you're a cop? And that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to enforce laws and protect what you know to be true, and that's being attacked. So when it comes right down to it in law enforcement, what do you think? And this, there's no way you're going to have one particular answer for this. What do you think is going to be, taking God out of it is sure not going to help change things, but what can you say that an individual officer can do to make a change on their department? You did a class, How Then Should We Serve? How then should they serve in this environment?
Yeah, so it's tough, right? I mean, I come to things from this Christian perspective, and I have, by the grace of God, the courage to stand up for things. And that does make people mad when you go against the current. So I certainly think the first answer is the same answer I started this whole program out with, right? Christ is the answer. Yeah. So let me first speak to those Christian people. As a Christian, you need to be strong and of good courage. The most often repeated phrase, one way or another, in all of Scripture is be strong, be courageous. You know, so we need to do that. We need to do the right thing. And we need to know that even if we get fired, that God will take care of us. For those that don't know Christ, you need to come up with a set of standards that's higher than you. It can't be your decisions. This is why I think that the Christ is the answer, because those rules have been here since the beginning of the created earth. But you got to have a set of standards that are higher than you, and seeing the humanity in people and being willing to do the things that are best for the people serving That's how we serve. We serve in spite of the bad environment that exists for cops today. We have to be willing to stand up and stand for what we think is right, regardless of the cost. And that's hard. That is very hard, especially in a job that, at least in the past, in most cases, guys didn't get hired in a day. It took a couple of years to get hired. And once you got hired, it wasn't easy to move around. I don't know. It's a tough job, but you have to have a standard higher than you.
Well, and I fully believe, Tim, and I've contemplated this for a while. When I took the BGA course, the Billy Graham Association course, and I became a volunteer chaplain for them, there was a pastor in my class, and he said, you know what? I never realized how much cops and pastors have in common. They share a lot of the same things. And I seriously believe that a lot of men and women, there are some that come to the job of law enforcement and they don't last long. And there are others that are called to the job of law enforcement and they're the ones who put in their careers. I think if you're one of the come and the called, you need to have a standard, like you said, that you set by. And you spoke earlier about truth. You know, what did Jesus say? I am the way, the truth, and the life. Nobody comes to the Father but by me. There's your standard. For those of you who don't know what Romans 13 is, I would highly encourage you to go read in the Bible, Romans 13. You will see completely where you stand in law enforcement and how you're called. And throughout this program, I'm going to, my what's been laid on my heart is to show you, and that's why I'm going to bring on people like Tim. Tim, what would you say, again, some final words to those who have been called to the job, for those who are afraid to maybe come to the job, but they feel that calling? Because let's face it, they're never going to let it go until they scratch that itch and they serve where they're supposed to. How would you encourage them now to seek out a career in law enforcement for a young guy that comes across, a young gal that comes across this message? What would you say to them? How should they go?
So again, unfortunately, we have two categories. For the Christian, be courageous, trust God's calling, go out and serve him. Don't serve your chief. Don't serve anybody there but Christ. If you do that, if you're serving Christ, you'll probably be just fine. But be expecting, trials that come along the way. And for both of these groups, learn to take care of yourself. We see a lot of things. We do a lot of things in law enforcement that take a toll on us, and it takes tolls on our marriages and our families. Be aware of those things and, make sure that you're taking care of yourself. For those that aren't Christians, again, think about that standard. If you don't believe that God is true, at least know that those rules are not bad rules. They're great rules, right? It tells you to love man and love God. So maybe adopt those rules. But what we need are good men and women in this job. We need people that care about people to come out and do this job. So find a standard, stick with that standard, and serve people. And if you can do that, you'll do well in this job.
I agree. Tim Barfield, hey, man, I appreciate you giving me an hour of your time. I know you got some stuff you got to be doing, but look, man, I appreciate it, brother. I love having conversation with you. I'm glad you're the first interview that I did on this show. I know this is going to reach a lot of people. This is going to reach the people that the Lord want to see. And for those of you who have tuned in to this program, this is my plan for Ministry of the Badge from here on out. Not only am I going to have Tim on, I'm going to have some other people on here to influence you to, as Tim said, we need good people into this job. Him and I left. We're done. We're doing what I can. I'm doing what I can from the outside coming in. If the Lord calls me back into law enforcement, man, you'll have to twist my arm. I did run for sheriff. I did encourage Tim to run for sheriff. We'll see what he does later on in life. But I did run for sheriff, but that wasn't the Lord's plan. But I am going to do this to serve people as I can. Look, I've said it many times, and I'll say it over and over again. The only way to be a good warrior to be a good minister of the badge is to be a servant of the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. I'm going to drop another episode next Friday. When this one comes out, look for another episode next Friday. Again, I thank you for being here. Thanks, Tim, for being here on Ministry of the Badge. And y'all take care.
For he is God's minister, an avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. You've been listening to Ministry of the Badge.